Hey cuties, this is Deidre C.
Hey cuties, it's Jay Nicole.
And welcome to the Queen Team Podcast.
A place to cultivate your queendom.
Cuties, thank you for joining us again here in the last of our episodes about healing from emotional abuse. One of the things that really struck me that Janisha, you shared in both our last episodes, as you were moving towards healing, you went back to your music. And music is so powerful in helping to switch our mindset, to change our moods, to make us feel good, to motivate us. So do you know what that reminded me of?
What?
It reminded me of that Spotify playlist we asked our cuties to give us titles for, to kind of help shift their mindset. And so I came across it in my queue. And I want us to add to that playlist. I already have a few songs there. So ladies, you can leave us some notes either in our emails or on our Instagram about some songs that really help to motivate you when you're feeling in a funky mood, to really kind of help you move into your queendom, whatever that looks like for you. And we'll leave a link for it in our Instagram and in our show notes so that you can come and reach out and check out some of the songs we have there already. And we'd love to grow it so that you can feel and move and dance in your power.
I loved him, but I hated being married to him.
So before all of this started happening to me and my life started going into a very unsuspected space, I felt that my former partner was an amazing man who was very thoughtful, and I felt like he and I together could create a space in the world that could help to change the world in such a beautiful way. I've always been a very altruistic person and very warm and caring, and I thought that that was the message that we both had for the world.
So in the beginning, I knew something was wrong by the way we talked to each other.
The smallest argument or the smallest disagreement would lead to a threat of physical abuse.
When he became very busy in the relationship and I started feeling like there was very little space for me to connect with him, we didn't really celebrate very much of anything. But the one thing that I thought that we would celebrate together was our anniversary. And when that started to become a challenge, I realized that I didn't really know where I fit in the picture.
So it was just that control and that fear. And I knew, honestly, right away. I think one of the things at the beginning where I knew something was wrong, the first instance is we were fresh in the relationship and a young lady had told me that he was, you know, dating her. And so early on, you know, before the feelings were too strong, I kind of told him, you know, we should go our separate ways. You know, we really shouldn't continue. And even though we weren't officially dating at that time, it was thought to me and brought to me that it was to be exclusive. So, you know, when I tried to break it off in the early beginning, it was constant phone calls, you know, please come home. I need to talk to you. Please come over here. I need to talk to you. And just constant back-to-back phone calls. So I knew that there was an issue then because I thought, wow, you know, he's really attached to me already. And it hasn't been that long, you know, which was basically a form of, you know, control to make me feel bad for, you know, what he's done.
they're just, people in love typically don't talk like that to each other. And they don't put each other down like that. It was just, it wasn't good. I remember, like, when we, before we got married, we had had, like, an incident, like, while I was pregnant. And just, like, him telling me that I was, like, kind of, like, a shitty person. And that, like, he was better than me because he worked. I just thought it was, you know, like, I'm pregnant and I got on his nerves. No, I should have ran for the hills because I, little did I know how bad it was going to be. So then we decided to get married. Another dumbass mistake on my part. I thought I could love this man whole and make him love me and let him see that I was worthy of his love, you know? Didn't quite work that way.
So I just want to thank and say how brave you cuties are who shared your story with us. I must say that I know how it feels to put yourself out there and be afraid of the reactions of others. I feel like this is a safe space where we all love each other. So I just want to send you all a shout out and say thank you for your bravery and courage. And I know that we will continue to inspire and encourage women together. So thank you.
Thank you so much, cuties. Today, our show is talking about healing and how to take some practical steps after being in an emotionally abusive relationship. In each of our episodes, you mention what a large part research had for you and understanding and kind of making your experience very concrete, validating your experience. Yeah. So what are some of the things you came across in terms of healing, in terms of some practical steps that you may have encountered through your healing?
Yeah, absolutely. So during my period of healing, there's a stage where you go through where you're researching. And again, I said like a fine-tooth comb. I was combing through so many things. And I came across this article called Learn the 6 Critical Stages of Healing from Emotional Abuse. Mm-hmm. We actually reached out to the author, and her name is Natalie. And she had shared and been through her own story of an emotional abuse and with her husband and had 9 children from that relationship. So I can only imagine. But we reached out to her to interview her to see if she would go over this with us. And she has created for herself her own platform to help other women heal and was unavailable. I still felt compelled to share these critical 6 stages of healing with you all. And I wanted to share some of my own ideas about some crucial steps that must take place in order to create healing after abuse. In the article, the first stage that Natalie talks about is waking up, and that's stage 1. And she refers to this waking up as a caterpillar, and this process is a caterpillar turning into a butterfly. The caterpillar is born. In this stage, this is when you stop being in denial. You stop lying to yourself, saying it's going to get better. They're going to change. If I change, things are going to get better. Once we make enough money or move here or whatever the future faking and the lies that you believe, that you come to grips with the belief that this is never going to change, this isn't going to get better, and you snap out of it. And for me, this process was very short. Once I found the physical evidence that I needed to be released from the relationship, along with my prayer that I had with God, I was completely resolved to move on.
Wow.
There was never a time when I was like, well, maybe one day I'll go back. I mean, maybe for a millisecond I felt that way.
Yeah.
But I was done. Like, well done, like crisp. I was very crisp.
Yes.
And there was no going back for me. And so this can be, for some of you, this may be a really vulnerable time because you're like, okay, now what? I'm used to identifying myself as a wife or as, if you're not married, somebody who's in this committed relationship. You've formed relationships around your marriage or your relationship. You've formed a lifestyle with this person. And so coming to grips that that is gone can be very daunting, but it is necessary for you to be alone so yeah. that you can heal.
Mm, yeah.
And if you don't take this time to be alone, because this is a time where you could be tempted to attach yourself quickly to someone else because you're used to being attached and you're used to being in a codependent relationship. And a codependent relationship is one that it's unhealthy boundaries where you depend on the other person for validation, for worth, for ideas, and even physically, like financially.
Yeah.
And for a place to live. So coming to grips that you're no longer going to have any of that can be kind of scary or very scary, but it's necessary for you to move on and to heal.
Right.
So the next step is learning. And this is when the caterpillar eats and eats and eats. Coming out of this relationship where you're realizing, oh my God, this person was beating me over my head every day, verbally and even inverbally, where they weren't saying anything, but their actions beat the crap out of you. You're trying to come to grips with that and figure out, what the hell just happened? How did I get here? How did I become this person? What happened to me and what happened to them? And so for me, this is when I became a YouTube junkie and an article and blog junkie. I first started researching what emotional abuse is. And there were a lot of jargon and trigger words that led me to other things like narcissistic personality disorder and sociopathic disorders and even psychopathic disorders. So I started researching some of those things, and I really felt like my situation could relate the most to narcissistic personality disorder. And so I just went on from there to start researching. And the more you research, especially on YouTube, then it shows you more videos.
Mm-hmm. Of course, all those suggested, you know, likes, or if you like this, right. you'll like all these, or this is the next one in the queue.
Right.
Yes.
So it just started suggesting more and more. And I found, again, that matched the closest. When I was able to identify the behaviors that he did and the behaviors that I did, that's where the validation came in.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be able to go to your friends and family and say, this is what happened to me, and they hear you, understand you, and validate you. Mm-hmm. That's going to be something that you have to do on your own, where you know what you know, and you start to believe yourself again.
Yes.
And you start to say, I know this happened to me. And the more that you find that will resonate with what you've been through, then the more validated you'll feel, because you've been made to believe that you were crazy this whole time and that you didn't see what you saw and that you shouldn't believe what you believe. Mm-hmm. But rebuilding that foundation where you find other women, you find other people that have been through what you've been through, your sanity returns to you.
Yeah.
And you feel calm and complete for a moment.
For a moment.
Only for a moment. And then comes the rage. So that moves us on to stage 3, which is grieving. And the caterpillar goes into the chrysalis and begins transforming. And so when you're in this stage, this is the time where you should embrace being alone. Because you may feel angry one day, then the next day you feel relieved, then the next day you feel excited for your future. You're looking at what you can have next,
yeah,
and how you can move on, and you feel excited, and then you go back to feeling angry again, and then you go to feeling still disillusioned because there's some unanswered questions. Mm-hmm. But I want to share with you the grief cycle. And this process may take 2 years or longer. For me, it didn't take that long. Maybe 6 months.
But do you think you began grieving before you actually left in some ways? Because there were so many needs not being met. And perhaps it was maybe shortened because in some subconscious way, or maybe in an unintentional way, that grieving process had already taken place because you were basically not, even though you were legally married and still living in the same physical space, yeah, you weren't being taken care of as, yeah, a wife.
And I wasn't really married. I was never really married.
Yeah.
The reason why I think it was easier for me to move on is because I quickly realized that from day one, like literally day one, it was all a game and, yeah, a joke. Uh-huh. There was never that time when I felt like it was real.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people, they're going to grieve that they had that period of time when things were actually good, and then things started to change. But for me, it was never good.
Mm-hmm.
It was only an illusion in the beginning, and then that illusion just kept on being fed.
Right.
And that's what kept me hopeful.
Yeah.
So it was easy for me to snap and, right, wake up. And once I did, it was like, poof, you know, and it was gone.
Yes.
So,
yes,
there was probably a part of the grieving process that I didn't have to experience because there wasn't much for me. I wasn't holding on to anything except a vapor, except a dream.
Yeah. The whole thing was just never, right, real.
It was never real from literally day one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been really intentional about healing. And I never went back to my abuser. It wasn't like we were having this back and forth.
Yeah.
Where I was calling and talking to him and we were, you know, still having sex and seeing each other all the time. That day that I left, I promised you I was D-O-N-E, done.
Mm-hmm.
So my brain was quickly switched to something else. Like, no, we're done here. But I want to share the stages of the grief cycle. The first stage is shock and denial, and that's defined by avoidance, confusion, fear, numbness, and blame. Then the next is anger, which is described by frustration, anxiety, irritation, embarrassment, and shame. Next is depression and detachment, where you feel overwhelmed, you feel blah, lack of energy, and helplessness. Then you move through to dialogue and bargaining, where you're reaching out to others, desire to tell your story, struggle to find the meaning for what has happened. And then last is acceptance, where you're exploring options and you have a new plan in place. And then you return to a meaningful life where you feel empowered, secure, your self-esteem goes up, and you find meaning in life.
You know, that doesn't always happen just in a straight line.
Yeah, it doesn't always happen, yeah, in that order. You can go back and forth and twist and turn, yes, and around and around.
Yeah. Stay in one longer than the other and go back a step. If I'm depressed, yeah, today, I might be angry tomorrow, as we kind of figure out how to move forward and through this. Yeah, that's really hard. But it's a strong work that you do, right?
Yeah.
Because you do eventually get to that meaningful life.
So let's move on to stage four, which is getting out. The butterfly emerges. The butterfly, you know, peeks its way out, and it's a completely different creature altogether, with the capability of doing things she could never do before, But first, she needs to shed the remnants of the old life in order to be free to move into her potential. If you've ever seen a butterfly work to get free, you will know that it isn't always easy. This work is critical, though. While she struggles, blood is pumping into her wings, prepping them for their future flight. And this takes time and effort, and others should not interfere with this process. So I would describe this stage as gaining your independence. Because while you were in your relationship, you were dependent on them for everything. And so this is where you start to create boundaries and letting people know in your life, I got this. You're also testing your own boundaries for yourself and building trust again. And this is also where you'll start to take responsibility for your own life and realize that you are the creator of your own reality. And this is life-changing because you're becoming empowered. So as she describes the blood pumping through the wings, your life force that pumps through your veins is your truth.
Yeah. It's returning back into your body, returning back into who you really meant to be.
Right. The truth that you discover and tell yourself.
Yeah.
It's critical that you start telling yourself the truth.
Yeah.
About everything.
Mm-hmm.
So stage 5 is when you rebuild your faith and friendships. And this is described by the butterfly's wings dry and stretch out.
Just prior to takeoff, yeah?
Right. Wow. You're just about to take off and be able to fly freely on your own, but you're not quite ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
So before you're about to fly somewhere and take off, you need to know where you're going. Yes. You can't just like be all willy-nilly about your life now.
No, or else you'll crash if you don't know where you're going.
Or you'll end up in the same situation you were in before.
Well, that's kind of like a crash.
Yeah, that's like an extra crash. So this stage is important because everything that you believed before, the way that you made your choices, the way that you moved through the world, that's gone.
Yeah.
It has to go. Now, there's probably some stuff that you can keep, but if you ended up in a codependent abusive relationship, it's likely that the way you thought about relationships, yourself, relationships in general, your purpose, who you are, all of that was wrong. This is where you rebuild your faith, your friendships, your connections with people, and you're kind of deciding where I want to plug in. Like, mm-hmm. What do I want to believe about myself? What do I want to believe about my religion or spiritual beliefs? What do I want to believe about people?
Yeah.
About my friendships. This is a stage for me where, well, first off, I want to say, as soon as I left, I deleted probably over 200 people off of my social media.
Wow.
Because I didn't want to be scrolling and be reminded. So a lot of people were collateral damage. They were neutral. They didn't really do anything wrong. But I met them during the marriage and we kind of had a neutral relationship where, I'll just be frank, I could take you or leave you.
Mm-hmm.
And you could probably take me or leave me. So let me just save you the choice of having to choose between me and my husband.
Yeah.
And that way I don't have to feel some type of way. This is my life and I want to feel good every day. I don't want to feel like, are you going back and forth between the both of us?
Yeah.
I don't want to feel like that. And so I'm saying that to say, a lot of friendship, or I'm going to put this in quotation mark, friendships or connections got severed just by association.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you know, but anyone that had played a significant part in me feeling good about myself and being supportive of me, they stayed. And that was like maybe one or two people, like really no, like hardly anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the relationships that I formed, a lot of them were based on that old mindset that I had developed in the marriage and even before that.
Yeah.
And see, the thing is that we're not just talking about what happens during the relationship.
Right.
We want to go all the way back to the beginning, to childhood, and figure out what needs to stay and what needs to go.
Right.
So again, we're in our room with our roommate or our little brother and sister sorting out our socks. These are my toys. These are your socks. This is my jacket. This is yours. From childhood all the way up till now. Because obviously the way we did this thing is not working.
Right.
So we got to get rid of some things. whether that be, again, your spiritual beliefs. For me, a lot of my beliefs got rocked and I had to decide, what am I going to believe? What am I not going to believe? What am I going to hold on to? And I believe that my beliefs expanded, where I believe now that there's more truth than what was revealed to me as a child growing up.
Yes.
That I know and accept now. And it brings me into a whole, as it brings me in as a whole person and not just this single narrative that I believe growing up.
Yes. Yes.
It's
kind of like a, I love your room analogy, but it also kind of reminds me of a set of clothes that you were given and you have to kind of almost like, you know, those hand-me-down bags we might have gotten from a cousin or a really good friend who's a few sizes bigger. And you kind of try on to see what works for you, what doesn't work for you.
Try on.
And really experiment. And you kind of can take those things from your past, from your childhood, to examine the agreements that were made, the things that perhaps we were taught, and see if maybe even we believe the way that we were taught or whatever our understanding of it is now. And, hey, does this fit me now?
Right.
And now that I've grown, I've changed, I've come to a new awareness. Is this working for me now? Right. Do I need to set this aside? Do I need to discard that? Do I need to pass on that? Do I need to, you know, donate it to Goodwill if we're talking about clothes or, you know, that particular analogy? But it really... it's taking, I can be responsible for this and I will hold on to this and this is good for me. And this isn't good for me.
Right.
Yeah. And that is a lot of work to sort through each one of those agreements or each one of those beliefs and let those go. And that's a huge process because sometimes we can alienate those who hold the same belief. Maybe sometimes those who taught us that belief.
Right.
You know, we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings and we don't want to, you know, offend anybody or step on toes. But the process of letting that go, you kind of move into the space where, like, is there anybody out there who believes what I believe?
Yeah.
You kind of feel orphaned for a minute. Mm-hmm. And then you want to hunt for, how do we replace that belief? Or how do I now process what I'm learning or what I want to integrate into my life? And how does that become a part of who I am now?
Right.
I could talk more and more about that.
And that's good. And I don't care what you're going through. You're going to have to come to a point in your life where you do that for yourself.
Yes. Yes.
Again, that's why I mentioned in the beginning, this was a catalyst for me to do this work that I was supposed to do.
Right.
So I'm not happy that it happened, but I'm still grateful and thankful for the process.
It's never easy.
Yeah.
It's, and even, you know, you've been talking about like pretty much the death of a marriage. Yes. Yeah. And this grieving process. The death
process. Of an idea,
right,
too.
Right. It doesn't matter when it comes to a marriage, the idea, a construct, a belief, an agreement. It is a death.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking about the grieving process prior to moving into step five. And it doesn't, I know for some people think, oh, well, it's so silly to mourn my perspective about this or about that. But really just creating space to say, well, that's who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is who I am. Every time you relinquish that belief or that agreement, regardless of how big or how small it is, a part of you dies.
Yeah.
So a new part of you can be reborn.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter if it's silly to Jane or Dick or Tom. If it was important to you, being able to hold space for yourself and honor that thing that you're letting go of, and then embracing the new person that was born and treat it as tenderly and as kindly as you would a newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're called to do.
Yeah.
To create that safe space to nurture and grow who we are becoming. It's beautiful.
And I really want to kind of touch on something that you mentioned about it, treating it like a baby. Listen, I say one of my mistakes during this healing process is wanting everything to be perfect and pushing myself to move through these things too quickly. Like, I just want to get better.
Yeah.
I don't want to feel like this anymore. And I know we were talking about that earlier, and I can relate to what you were saying, just wanting to hurry up and, okay, now I'm free. Now I can do this and I can reach my goals and I can start my business and I can, meet the next great guy and I can have more babies. And I had to stop myself like, whoa,
yeah,
I'm not ready for that yet. Yeah. Like, let's finish, you know, like let yourself rest, let yourself just enjoy being me. Just enjoy being with myself.
Right. Like, we would never tell a newborn baby on week two, all right, get up and walk now. Let's take your first step.
It's not time.
Let's get to running and climbing and jumping.
Yeah.
But you have to let, really, you need time for growth and development.
You do. Mm-hmm. And another analogy is a bear that goes into hibernation.
Yes.
And I remember in about November, December, when winter slash fall came, because here in California we have winter and we have summer, like,
and even winter.
Yeah. And we probably have a few weeks of spring and a few weeks of fall. But when it was transitioning, I remember washing dishes and it was one of those gloomy days, and you know, looking out the window and feeling very lonely and alone. But then God spoke to me and said, appreciate this time, and gave me the analogy of a bear in hibernation. Mm. What is a mama bear doing in hibernation? They're getting ready to birth their baby. Mm-hmm. And then once they give birth, they're nurturing that baby.
Yes.
And they are themselves growing and being restored and renewed, so that when the spring comes, they can go out and have a field day with the fish.
Yeah.
You know, but without taking that time, they will die. Their babies will die. Mm-hmm. And so that baby that God put inside me that I needed to birth, it needed time to be nurtured and nursed, mm-hmm. And taken care of and given my full attention.
Yeah.
And the first baby that God gave me was me, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to nurture and slow down and take care of myself. And this was probably the first time in my life where I allowed myself to be alone.
Yeah.
Where I allowed myself to be completely and utterly alone. There was not a friend I could call. I had a therapist, but you only go see your therapist once a week or every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So every single night in that midnight hour, when you're like, I don't have anybody that I can hold on to, mm-hmm. you got to learn how to hold on to God and hold on to yourself.
Yeah.
And not drive yourself crazy with your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so embrace this time in step three, when you go into the chrysalis, and moving through step five, as you grieve, as you go through this process, let yourself be alone. Mm-hmm. So that you can find yourself again.
Yeah, so beautiful.
So stage six is your new life begins. And this is where the butterfly spreads her wings and flies away. So you've gone through you've woken up realizing that you were in a bad place. You've gone through step two, where you just eat and eat and eat and you gather all the information. Then moving on to grieving. Then you break out and you realize, okay, I'm ready to start my new life. You've rebuilt your faith, your relationships, your friendships, and now it's time for you to fly. This is where I am now. And I feel like these stages can repeat themselves, like the grief cycle. You can go back and wake up to something else that you need to learn, and go back and need to grieve again. Go back and need to do more research about what you've been through. But you've developed a new mindset, and now you're ready to fly. You're ready to start taking on new things in your life, whether that be your career, your relationships, your career, a romantic relationship, the way that you deal with your children. It's all from a new, healthy, healed place. Not from a dysfunctional place that allowed you to get into this mess in the first place. Natalie mentions in the article that one of the exciting parts of flying is helping others who are still crawling on the ground to see how they can also fly and be free. And so that's you being an example to others and letting other people see you be a light, inspired to them. Mm-hmm. That was the whole point of me sharing this story, is to say, I made mistakes. I made a wrong choice because I had some broken mindsets, but I moved through it with grace, with my dignity and integrity.
Yes.
And there were so many things that I could have done that would have been well deserved, like post online everything that my husband was doing that I found out, or have a major attitude with him or try to take all of his money or try to keep the kids from him, I call him and say, do you want to talk to your kids? I've hit him up and say, do you want to come spend time with them? I'm saying this not to toot my own horn, but I did it because I chose who I wanted to be.
Right, right.
Do I want to be an angry, bitter, typical, hurt, angry Black woman?
Yeah.
Or do I want to be who I really am, which is right. somebody who just really genuinely loves people?
Exactly.
And instead of looking at him as this terrible person, I look at him as somebody who just needs to be healed, who was broken and needs love. But that first has to come from him.
Exactly.
I could call him today and be like, just come to my house and I will cook for you and I will love on you and I will talk to you and I will counsel you and this and this and that. But it doesn't matter if he doesn't love himself first.
Yeah.
So decide who you want to be and let that be your guide.
Yes.
Let that be your integrity.
Yeah. That's so strong. So strong.
So now I want to move on to just a really quick few things that I feel, aside from these six steps, that you need to do to help with your healing process. And the first one is figure out who you are, your identity. As I mentioned before, a lot of who you are is gone, your shell. And so this is an opportunity for you to discover who you are and take the time to do that. How you can do that is spending time with yourself.
Yes. Like taking yourself on dates.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Spending time with yourself. For me, there was some things that I just intrinsically knew that I loved. Again, I mentioned them before, my music, getting all new clothes, decorating my place. My room looks exactly how I want it to look.
Mm-hmm.
It feels how I want it to feel. And that's something that you can ask yourself. Wake up every day. Get a journal. How do I want to feel today?
Yeah.
What do I want to do with my time? What's most important to me? If you had unlimited time and unlimited resources and money, what would you be doing with yourself?
Yeah.
What makes you smile? What makes you happy? What makes you feel amazing?
Mm-hmm.
And just start doing that. And I believe that identity is not something that you just wake up and you just boop. No, for me, it was an onion where the more that I got to know myself, the more that was revealed. And I slowly started to see myself or like a puzzle, you know,
yeah.
putting those pieces together. And now I can see the picture. And maybe 5 years from now or a month from now, I may change my mind like, oh, no, I learned something else,
mm-hmm.
you know, about myself.
I like what you're saying there. It's like an ongoing process.
Yeah.
We are not stagnant.
Yeah.
There is no, anything that is stagnant is either decaying, which yeah. is still changing.
Yeah.
Or really stinky.
Yeah.
like a pond that's stagnant. Yeah. But again, still even there's yucky life growing in maybe unhealthy ways.
Yeah.
When we're stagnant. I don't think we were ever meant to like stay in one place.
Right.
We're always growing, breathing, changing, evolving,
right.
becoming something new.
Right.
So even if you have your identity and you feel like you're in the most confident space today, who knows, 2 weeks, 5 months, a year, 3 years, you will be a different person in those next few moments than you are in this moment. So embracing new identity can be really important and being on a constant lookout. You can't just say, okay, well, I'm this person. And it continues to change like you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The next thing that you need to do is follow your intuition. This is so important because I know for me, if I would have followed my intuition that yeah. said, ding, 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 like, well, it feels really good for you to tell me you love me after 2 weeks and that you knew you would always marry me, but that doesn't quite sound right, really. That doesn't really feel right.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, it feels good initially, but in the end, this is kind of like too much too soon.
Right.
Learning how to follow your intuition and really connect with God and pray and ask for what you need is critical.
Yes.
And ways to do that, really, for me, in my opinion, the main way to do that is by unplugging.
Mm-hmm.
You have to spend some time with yourself.
Yes.
Get off of your phone. get off of, you know, watching TV if that's what you do. Even if you're an avid reader and you just read and read and read, you always have to have your mind going.
Mm-hmm.
You have to turn off. You have to get connected with yourself.
It's like those things are more like self-medication.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily for growth, for change, for embracing something new. It's more to like detach from reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just kind of making yourself feel better because I'm avoiding or I don't want to be with the feeling, or the growth is too painful, or the grieving is too painful.
Right.
Yes. Yes. Finding places where you can genuinely be with yourself in a deep space.
Absolutely. So I believe intuition grows as you let it grow.
Yeah.
It's like the more you water it, the bigger it grows.
Mm.
And before you know it, you won't be second guessing yourself for the most part.
It's like you're growing the trust, not necessarily your intuition. It's the trust
in following
it. Yeah.
Following the trust.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing I want to talk about that you can do physically is grounding techniques.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about that. I mean, I feel like grounding kind of feels like rooting yourself down and like being in one spot. But even when we were talking about this, it kind of was like, huh, what does that really look like? And what are some of those techniques that you may have practiced yourself or that you've come across in your research?
Yeah. So the definition of grounding or grounding technique is that it's a technique that helps keep someone in the present. They help reorient the person to the here and now and in reality. Grounding skills can be helpful in managing overwhelming feelings or intense anxiety. They help someone regain their mental focus from an often intensely emotional state. So that's 100% something that you need to do if you've been through this.
Definitely. It helps to cover all of the bases of the things that we've spoken about in this series. Yeah. So you discussed, before we even talk about those ways to ground ourselves, like, how does one know that we're not even grounded? Like, sometimes I feel, especially looking back in my past, and there was a time in a season where I felt so disconnected from my body, from my whole self, and I couldn't tell you, you know, oh, I'm grounded, or I'm feeling, quote unquote, like myself, or in my body, or another word that I've heard tossed around a lot is centered. And of course, there's grounded. So how would even one discover or know that they're not grounded? Are there any signs out there? Are there any ways to kind of like have like a litmus test to say, oh, I'm grounded, or I'm not grounded, or I'm feeling like myself, or in my body, or centered, or whatever language somebody might ascribe to?
I know I don't feel grounded when I feel really anxious, when I'm overthinking, when I'm not eating well.
Yeah.
Definitely when I haven't gone outside, when I haven't journaled or prayed, when I'm just letting the day command me instead of me commanding the day.
Yeah. Oh, that's strong. I love how you phrase that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me just be real. We all know what we're supposed to be doing.
Dum, dum, dum.
And I mentioned this before. I'm going to say it again for those that missed whatever episode I've said it. You know what you're supposed to be doing. Like, okay, I know I'm supposed to wake up in the morning. I'm supposed to journal or pray or read my Bible, whatever it is that you feel led to do.
Yeah.
But you don't. You reach over, you grab your phone, you scroll, you hit the snooze button, whatever it is that you do. Then you're in a bad mood, you're yelling at your kids, or you're short with them, you have a bad drive on the way to work, or whatever it is that you do in the morning because you haven't gotten up and been intentional about your time.
Right.
And so for me, being grounded is being intentional about everything that I do and feeling like that's when you come home and feel like yourself.
Ooh, yeah.
That's where you're able to release your guilt, your shame, your frustration, and then be able to be more productive, feel lifted, more healthy, or making better choices when you do what it is that you know you're supposed to do.
Right.
For me, I know I'm supposed to get up in the morning, maybe 30 minutes before my kids do, and do some journaling. do some prayer and meditation, do some heavy thinking, or maybe not heavy, but do some thinking about how my day should go, and ask, God, how should my day go? What should I be doing today? How should I be spending my time? Mm-hmm. I think all too often we already have in our minds how we want our day to go.
Yeah.
And then we make choices around that, or we don't have a plan, and so the choices make us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. Say it louder for the people in the back.
We have no plan, so choices choose us, or things choose us.
Yeah.
We don't choose.
Right.
And again, your humanity is wrapped in your ability to choose and to create.
Yes.
So if you're not choosing and you're not creating, there's something else that's choosing and creating for you.
Yeah. And the inertia will do it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll just happen on its own. And then you are at the end of the day, the end of the week, the end of the month, the end of the year, feeling like, what did I do with myself? I could have had so much more accomplished.
Right.
And felt better.
Yeah.
But the practices that I use to ground myself are journaling, going outside in nature, and prayer. Those are probably the three things that I do to come home to myself, to be in touch with myself.
Yeah. You know, with I love that phrase, coming home to yourself. And feeling, I know, a feeling at home in your body is something else that comes to mind when you say that phrase. And some of the grounding practices that I have are yoga. I adore yoga, and it's really helped to create unity in my mind, my body, and my spirit. And it's been such a strong piece of me not just making that connection, but feeling stronger.
Yeah.
Feeling stronger, obviously, in my physical body, but feeling mm-hmm. stronger and not being so afraid of my emotions and really bringing clarity of thought.
Mm-hmm.
When we begin yoga, or when a yoga practice is started, at the beginning of the practice, generally an instructor or a person for themselves, if they're doing a home practice or practicing in their own space, would bring an intention.
Mm.
And even before the moving starts and the different poses start, we utilize the breath
mm-hmm.
to kind of come into and at home in the body and breathe in that intention for the practice.
Right.
Whether it's a letting go of something, whether that's you're thinking of someone in particular, whatever your prayer or your hope might be in that moment, setting that intention and then utilizing your, I like to do it in my personal practice as a prayer with my body. Mm. And that really, really seems to ground me and to create more space in my mind and in my heart to allow the things that are most important to be sifted to the top of my priority list.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that, this grounding piece, because it doesn't necessarily, even though it's very vital to emotional healing, it's pretty vital to living a healthy life.
Yeah, just a lifestyle.
Yes, yes. And something else that I've been practicing, and I've practiced this on and off for quite a few years, is cultivating gratitude.
I'm pretty
sure we talked about that in episode one.
Yeah.
but for me, writing down at the beginning of the day three things that I'm grateful for when I wake up in the morning, and then in the end of my day, writing down things that I saw that happened to me in the day that made that day a great day.
Yeah.
And just remembering those high points, because my whole day isn't my kid having a tantrum.
Yeah.
You know, when I was at the grocery store, which really probably lasted for the finite time of 5 to 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Which feels like 5 to 7 hours when right. you're in the moment. But I can't let that one thing skew the perception of my whole day and not see anything else that was good or beautiful. And so that's really helped me to be on the lookout for things that are incredible, are amazing, are gratitude worthy. And even in the midst of a tantrum, perhaps my gratitude is I didn't lose my SHIT.
Right. And I didn't go the F off on you.
That's right.
But I just sat here and watched instead of
right.
beat you.
Right. And I was patient and I was compassionate. Even if that means not not dragging you out of the store by your heels and leaving all my groceries behind.
Right.
And so those two things, especially actually this week, especially have been, have had a huge part in me moving into feeling at home in my body.
Yeah.
so grounding. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And all of our cuties out there too.
So that's going to wrap up our healing episode. For those of you who practice any healing techniques or have healing practices, maybe you do herbs. Maybe you do a yoni steam, which we talked about in our vaginal voices episode, or one of those.
We talked about during our vaginal series.
Yeah. Let us know what you do to promote self-care and self-healing to your emotional life.
Yeah. You can share those with us in a variety of places by checking in with us on Instagram at the Queen Team Podcast. You can drop us a line at our email at thequeenteampodcast@gmail.com. You can also reach out to us on Facebook, also at the Queen Team Podcast. And if you want to leave a comment, you can find us on our website at thequeenteampodcast.com. Janisha, all the incredible things that you have shared with us over these last 3 weeks, I know have been a blessing to our cuties and really even to me. So thanks again for sharing. Can you tell us all where we can find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at love2beyou. Love is spelled L-U-V. And you can find me on YouTube at love2beyou as well. You can send me an email at love2beyou@gmail.com. And I want to extend a special invitation to any cutie who wants to join my support group for women who are in emotional abusive relationships, have left emotional abusive relationships, or maybe experienced it in their childhood. We didn't talk about that, but that is something where you may need some support and healing from.
Yes.
Also, the group is for anyone who has left a difficult relationship, whether it was a marriage or you're actually going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. So I just want to have a space where women can come together and be safe to share their experiences, their thoughts, and encourage one another. This is a positive place.
Yes.
A place of love where you can be safe, where you probably didn't feel that way when you were in your relationship, or that you are in a relationship where you don't feel safe. Come and feel safe with us. I L-U-V you cuties, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, cuties.
Bye, cuties.
And you know what it reminded me of? Do you know what it reminded me of?
Sorry, I'm trying to sign into Pinterest. No, what did you, what, yeah, no.
Do you know what it reminded me of?
What?
It reminded me of that playlist we asked our cuties to add to way back in the day.
That doesn't even make sense what you just said.